Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Science Bloggers podcast. I'm David Latchman, and my guest this week is Rebecca Fitch. Rebecca is an engineer with a background in physics who currently works in bringing fusion energy to the world. She is also the host of the YouTube channel Science with Bexy. I immediately loved Rebecca's YouTube channel when I first watched a few episodes, not only because my background is in physics, but the field is not known for its diversity. So it's great to see a woman talk about physics and make it both fun and accessible. And I hope that after you listen to this episode, you'll check her channel out and be excited about physics too. So, hello Rebecca, how are you?
Hi Dave, yeah, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And I guess we're all under stay-at-home orders right now. So how's that affecting you right now? How are you doing?
Yeah, doing okay. Luckily, not much of my life has changed apart from I don't have to drive to and from work every day. So, yeah, it's pretty good. I think we're lucky that this has happened at a time where we have such great technology, because if this had happened back when we were all on Nokia 3310s, then I think it would be a very different situation. But luckily, I could still FaceTime family and still work from home. So, yeah.
Good thing that we have that technology that can connect us and allow us to work somewhat effectively, even though it's not ideal.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. So why don't we start by telling the listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, I have a physics degree and I graduated just under 4 years ago. And since then, I've been working as an engineer, mainly as a consultant. So working in quite a few different sectors like defense, aerospace, civil nuclear. And I've just always been pretty keen on the STEM activities, which is like the science, technology, engineering, maths, trying to get more students engaged in it. So whenever I can, volunteer at schools and do presentations and stuff. And I just had this thought, I think late last year, where I was like, why don't I just start a YouTube channel to try and get even more engagement? I've never really kind of had any role models in the physics world. I love Professor Brian Cox, but that's about it. And he's male. So I thought, why don't I try and give it a go and see if I can help get more young people, especially females, engaged in science and physics. So yeah, I'm currently just balancing my engineering job and starting my YouTube channel.
Yeah, you know, when I had seen your YouTube channel and it was like very physics related, you know, I was like very happy.
Yeah.
I also have that background in physics and...
Oh, amazing.
I know from experience that, yeah, there are hardly any women in physics, you know, not just in faculty, but in a class in general.
Mm.
And that's from high school all the way up to graduate school. So I think it's really cool that, you know, we have a woman out there that is doing something like that. You know, it adds visibility. And
yeah,
hopefully you inspire other young girls to think, hey, this is something I can do because someone who looks like me is doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think physics has such a bad rep. You know, when you think physics, you think Big Bang Theory.
I don't like that show too much, but
no, but it kind of paints the picture and it's like the classic stereotype of what everyone thinks physics is all about. I think it would be great if like one more student got involved or it made science and physics just that little bit more exciting, because I think for a lot of students it's really daunting and really scary, and it's about trying to change that perception.
Yeah, and I think it's the way we present not just the subject of physics but the mathematics in general, that you have to be super smart, you have to be like this genius to be able to do this stuff.
Yeah,
and I think if I were to tell any student it, you don't have to be. At least by the time you get into college or university, you're just doing your best to solve a problem. And
yeah,
that's all that matters.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think you have to be insanely clever or a nerd to be good at science and maths, but it's about just simplifying the problem. And I think if you go into it with the mentality that it's too difficult, then you will find it too difficult.
Yeah, exactly. So what got you interested in physics?
So up until, for us it's A levels. I don't know what you have in America, but between the ages of 17 and 18, before we go to university, we have 2 years of A levels. So that's kind of where you specialize down to three or four subjects. And I kind of chose physics as an A level as my token science. Like, I was always encouraged by parents and teachers to take a token science just in case, because it looks good. And it was actually in my first term of A levels when I realized I'm actually all right at this. I think we were having weekly tests and I was doing well in the homeworks and stuff. And I thought, should I actually pursue this? I looked up what other A levels you had to have to do physics at uni, and I had to have maths as well, which I didn't already have. So I had to teach myself the first half of, the first term of the maths A level over the Christmas holidays and kind of try and show the school that I had done enough to catch up. And I dropped my business studies subject and I took maths on. And that was kind of it. It was as soon as I made that decision to learn maths and pick that up, that was kind of, I was set on doing physics at uni, really. And for me and my friends, it did come out of nowhere. But it was just because I thought, I'm actually doing all right at it. And I never thought I would.
That's really good. You know, it sounds like you were encouraged somewhat by your school.
Yeah.
Which, again, you know, I don't think like many women or anyone who is not a typical white male gets from teachers or, you know, people in colleges and universities. So I think it's really great that you were encouraged to do this. So, yay.
Yeah. I've never thought, you know, what if the school just point blank said no? I've never even thought about that. Like, right now, I probably would have done English or business at uni, and my life would be completely different. So, yeah, it's crazy how one decision that the school made to help support me in that decision has literally changed my life.
So were people equally supportive when you were at university?
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean, though. I think we had 100 students, 120 students, of which maybe 7 to 10 were females. So, yeah, it was interesting. But I think I was equally encouraged, and I don't think it affected my time on the course at all, really. Maybe I'm one of the lucky ones and I got a good kind of class to be with, but I didn't feel any difference between me and my male cohort. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm glad it was a positive experience for you.
Yeah.
You know, I know a few women in physics, you know, in grad school or from undergrad all the way up to grad school, and I know their experience haven't always been positive, but they still persist.
Yeah, I think university was absolutely fine. Work has been a bit different, I think, and kind of getting to terms with that and going into a male-dominated work sector has been interesting and has had its challenges.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's probably difficult some level to deal with everything, but you're there and
yeah.
Just stay there. You know, don't let anyone kick you out.
No, yeah, and it comes with its challenges, but I think everyone can see it's definitely the right way forward. Obviously, having more females on board in our industry is beneficial. Obviously, you're kind of, instead of making the most of 50% of the population, you're you know, choosing your talent from 100% of the population.
Yeah. So you said you also do some educational activities. Do you want to go into that?
Yeah. So it's just small stuff, like going into schools and trying to do a presentation about engineering and science and trying to make it sound cool and interesting, but also not too difficult. So I often go in and just talk about some of the projects I've worked on for work. So what we try and do is make it sound, you know, as exotic, and this is where we've worked, you know, if we've traveled for work, or this is, you know, I've worked on a plane, or I've worked on a power plant, that kind of thing, because so many students just don't know how fun and exciting engineering and science can be, and it can open so many doors for you. And they literally need engineers and scientists worldwide. So if you wanted to travel for it, then you could. So yeah, it's mainly going around talking to schools. My company does a goblin car racing thing. So we get all the parts of a mini racing car delivered, and the students have to build it and decorate it and then race it around a track. And you get different prizes for best decorated, fastest lap and stuff like that. So that's kind of encouraging kids to build and be practical as well.
So how have students reacted to seeing you as an engineer with a physics background?
Yeah, normally they're excited. It's a good reaction. And I mean, the bit that I'm always terrified of is the questions at the end. But I mean, it's either going to be dead and no one puts their hands up and you're struggling, or they ask you a question when you're put on the spot and you can't answer it. But luckily, so far, we've had like loads of hands raised, lots of people telling us about their parents who are engineers and stuff. So that's really nice and really sweet. And instead of, like, it's always nervous before you do them, but when you leave, instead of feeling annoyed about it or uptight, you leave feeling relieved and happy that you did it and like you've helped out a bit.
So do you think it gets easier every time you do it? You get less nervous when you start?
A little bit, but not too much, because obviously the audience is different every time. So there could always be that one, I don't know, that one heckler or that one that one kid that just wrecks the whole thing. But so I guess there's always going to be an element of nerves because it's the unknown, and kids are hilarious. Like sometimes they just don't have a filter and they could ask the strangest question or you don't know how to answer it. So you're always going to have to be on your toes anyways, so I think a little bit of nerves is good, just so you don't get too relaxed and then muck up.
Yeah, but I'm sure you're doing fine. I mean, I'm sure they keep asking you to do it again, so you're not messing up too badly, right?
Yeah. That's when I know I'm not doing a great job, when the company stops sending me out to go to schools.
It's like, no, just be an engineer.
Yeah.
We need you to stay in the office.
In the office.
Yeah. So what age range are these children?
Generally they're primary. So for us that's years 3 to 6. So what is that? 7 to 11, ages. Okay. 7 to 11. And I often kind of ask why we're not going to older schools. And because obviously when we're talking about engineering as a career, surely we should be talking to people ages 16 to 18 who are about to make choices about universities and degrees.
Right.
But I've been told that if we go into schools at that age, then it's just too late. We've already missed the boat, I guess. So they try and get us into schools to see students that much younger.
Yeah.
Because that's the age where they'll be getting their mindset on whether or not they like the subjects. And that's the impressionable age where you know, if they get to 15 and they've never seen a female engineer or a female scientist, then there's not even going to be an option in their head for them to pick as a higher educational subject. So, yeah, it's a bit strange, actually, that we have to go in so young, but makes sense.
I can see their point. You want to plant a seed early to tell kids that, hey, this is an option. But I think also we have to be mindful that at later ages, I think that's where kids start getting discouraged, simply because they have teachers telling them, oh, you can't do this because, you know, girls don't do this, or you're not smart enough, right?
Yeah.
And I think that visibility of having, you know, someone who looks like them saying, hey, look, I made it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that can change things as well. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
It's a tough balance. And I guess when you visit the kind of 7 to 11 year olds, you can affect more of them and, you know, have that footprint early on.
Yeah.
But when you're visiting schools at for the older students, you'll be helping out, I guess, the minority or the few who are on the fence about it or really want to do it, but they're not being encouraged enough. And this person coming in would give them the extra boost to say, yes, actually, I am going to pursue that subject. So I guess it's about trying to target the numbers, really, isn't it? But yeah, definitely. I think that doing presentations, especially on careers in science and engineering, would be better suited at the older ages. Because whenever we go into the younger schools, we always have to kind of figure out how we're going to talk about our careers in a simpler way and try and make it sound as fun and not scary as possible.
Right. And I'm agreeing with you. And, you know, I think all the kids, they are already doing these subjects. So they have some context in which to put what you're going to say into, hey, this is a career I can pursue. And this is what it will take to pursue that career. I don't know. Maybe one day you'll get to do it. I don't know. Hopefully.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'm going to go back to my company now and say, I want to go into a high school where I can talk to 15 to 18 year olds, I think.
But listen to this podcast. It makes a good case. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you also do a YouTube channel, Science with Bexy. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so like I said earlier, I just wanted to, I guess, do what I do with the school visits, but, you know, do it to more students. And the way to do that is over YouTube and over the internet. And so I knew I wanted to make a science YouTube channel, and I knew the premise was going to be fun, trying to make it engaging and interesting. It kind of developed from there. And so now what I kind of do is little 4 to 6 minute videos covering a science topic. And obviously I've started with physics, so because that's my degree. So to start with, 4 to 6 minute physics topics. And each one I'm trying to make really simple. I'm trying to put funny little bits in there, make it engaging, a little bit silly and wacky, but hopefully still getting the educational content across. We'll see how it goes. There might not be enough students out there that are interested, but I'm hoping that the ones that are can pick it up, and it just gives them, if anything, even more content to take on.
So how did you come up with the idea itself to do all of this, you know?
It was kind of just, I was brainstorming one day about the STEM activities, and I was just thinking, how can I get this to more students? Because, you know, there's only so much you can do. There's only so many times or so many hours you could put away a week by traveling to schools and doing talks. And whenever you do a talk, it's to between probably 30 and 60 students. Whereas, you know, if I did one video, how many students could watch that, like, worldwide? So yeah, I think for me, it was more about outreach. I was trying to think of something I could do that I'm passionate about. And I was like, oh, what am I passionate about? Obviously, physics, and trying to get more students and girls involved in it. So yeah, I thought I would give it a go, see if I was any good at communicating it in the way that I wanted to, because I know that I wanted to kind of make the topics seem easier, simpler, more fun. And I feel like I could give physics that perception, you know, make it seem simpler and easier. Yeah, I guess I wanted to give it a go and see if I could be one of these people that helped change people's perception of the subject.
So have you looked at any other science YouTube channels, especially if they are physics related, for inspiration?
Yeah, and there is so many good ones. There's a lot of American ones though, so there's not so many UK ones, but like all the American ones are just, they're so huge, they're so amazing, and they're really fun. But a lot of them are very experiment based. They do a lot of fun experiments at home, whereas I'm kind of trying to cover physics topics and make and explain them kind of to help with education and getting through school. So if a student kind of gets taught about nuclear fission at school and leaves thinking, I don't know what on earth that teacher just told me about, then hopefully my video would kind of help put more context into that and make it more understandable. Because I know that teachers, obviously, they've got 30 other children to teach at any one time. There could be questions everywhere. The lesson could be a bit disjointed. I don't know. So I think that it's kind of there for students for if they need more educational resource, to be honest. But yeah, there's so many cool science YouTubers out there.
Yeah, and you know, you're right. You know, so many of the science YouTube channels out there are American. And you know, nothing wrong with that. But it'd be nice to see a little bit more diversity, a little bit more voices, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it still suffers from that same problem. They are probably, at least the physics ones, the number of women doing physics YouTube channels, you can probably list on your hand.
Yeah.
Which is a bad thing, you know. We
And I probably follow them all on Instagram.
And I probably follow all of them on YouTube as well. So that tells you like how bad things are. But
yeah,
hopefully you'll help change that, you know. And
yeah, I mean, I'm dreaming big, but, you know, hopefully. And what it's just really nice how, so my manager at work, his son tunes in every Monday at 11 to watch my new upload. Oh. And he'll tell me like, ah, Bex, Jack has watched your video. And it's just stuff like that. It's the small things that I'm like, oh, I'm definitely going to carry on doing it, you know. And it's really nice.
Yeah, that's kind of awesome. It seems like you're getting positive feedback for your channel. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. I think my dad's been at work and he lives across the country. And he's had someone at work say to him, oh, is your daughter Rebecca? Like, me and my family watch her videos. So, yeah, it's definitely gaining some sort of traction, which is great. Because it is supposed to be, you know, for children and for parents. And even my friends, like my age, you know, mid-20s, none of them have cared about physics or science ever in their lives. But they're watching because they think it's interesting and, you know, for the sake of 5 minutes a week, you get to learn something new and something that's actually pretty cool. And you get to realize that physics wasn't boring and physics wasn't that difficult.
I think that's one of the things that I think we really have to tell people is that, you know, physics, yeah, as you say, it isn't boring, it isn't difficult. We just need to get people to overcome that perception that it is.
Yeah.
You mentioned parents as part of the audience. You know, what role do you think parents play in your science communication efforts?
Obviously, for me, my parents were great growing up, and obviously they encouraged me to pursue physics out of nowhere. And I think it's parents will encourage their children. They have a lot of influence over their children and what their children can watch on the internet. And I've had a couple of people that have said, oh, me and my son watched your videos and we love them. And so it's nice that I hear that parents are watching them with their children. And it's the kind of thing where a lot of adults, if they didn't study physics or science, then they probably won't know a lot of this either. So they're quite cool little nuggets of information and stuff that you can drop at the pub, like, oh, how the aurora borealis works or whatever. So, yeah, I think parents are highly influential in how their children kind of grow up and what they're interested in. And if you can sit down and watch the episodes together, then that's just awesome.
Yeah, you're right. You know, that parental aspect is so important, you know, for a child's development and interest. So it's good that you're sort of targeting parents as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think most of my audience so far, I wouldn't have if it wasn't for their parents telling their kids about it. So that it's great. And it's great that they kind of approve of it so far. So they see the video and they think, this is great. I'm going to show my child and it's going to help them learn and grow. So that's pretty cool.
So when you head to the pub, are you the type of person to also talk about physics?
Yeah, so this is another one of the reasons I started the channel, actually. So when I was first thinking about it, it was going to be like a cool physics fact channel, because there's been so many times I've been at the pub with my gal pals and I've just dropped some facts about physics or something cool that I know that they don't know, and they're like, oh my god, that is so cool, I never knew that. I'm like, yeah, it is, like, everyone should know this. So yeah, often when I'm at the pub, I'll try and just share some cool info.
I don't know, maybe you should get a drink one day. I think that'd be really cool. I just love talking about physics and science stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's honestly, I don't know how people think it's boring. And like when we're at the pub and, you know, obviously a couple of drinks in and you're telling this story and imparting knowledge, they think it's wicked. And they're like, that is awesome. How did I not know that? So yeah, I just thought that even if not all of my audience are students, they're people who are my age and people who just wanted to know some more about physics and never really got round to it, that would be awesome as well.
Yeah, and you know, with everything that's going on right now around the world, you know, with climate change, with, well, this pandemic that's going on right now, you know, being educated in science has become so critically important, because we're going to be making so many decisions based on what science says.
Yeah.
And that's where science communicators, you know, come into play. It's getting that message across to people.
Yeah.
You know, so keep up the good work.
Thank you, and you.
I just try. You know, every time I talk to someone about science communication, I just realize, like, there's just so much I don't know.
Yeah.
And so much I can be doing better. So
yeah, you can never know it all, like, literally. And I guess people like us get to work with really cool, interesting people.
Yeah, that's right. I get to talk to really cool and interesting people, like, you know, what you're doing.
Yeah.
So where do you see the future of your YouTube channel? What direction are you hoping to take it? What are you going to continue discussing about? Are you going to continue with physics? Are you going to explore other branches of science?
Yeah, so obviously I started with physics because it's my degree, and I think it's the biggest problem area anyway with regards to kind of female engagement and public perception. But then obviously moving on, my degree was basically half maths. So maths is definitely the next topic. And after that, I'd biology. My sister's a doctor, so she could help me out with biology. And I've got a chemistry teacher friend, so she could help me out with chemistry. Like, I would love to branch out into all of the STEM subjects. It's just about finding the time to make all the videos and create the content, really.
Yeah, that sounds awesome, especially if you can get that help along, you know, the way and get people to do that part that you may not necessarily be good at. So awesome. I'm sure it takes like a lot of time to do exactly what you do, not just to script everything out, but to record and storyboard and everything.
Yeah, it's the editing afterwards that actually takes the longest, but...
Yeah, I know. I mean, even with a podcast and you're just dealing with audio, it takes time. So are your friends going to eventually appear on your channel?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I've had so many people, and luckily, like, they are all female as well. So many of my friends that have offered their help and would, you know, be up for appearing on the channel and helping out. So yeah, I think it would be great to do that and just to show more diversity and just to show there's more than just the one of me. There's lots of us out there. So yeah, that would be great.
Well, you know, I look forward to seeing how your channel grows and evolves.
Oh, thank you.
You know, as I said, my background is in physics, and I think there are very few people actually who have physics-related channels. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome to see one like yours. It's awesome to see a woman doing it. So keep up the good work.
Great, thank you.
I guess we've talked about quite a few things. So do you want a chance to say something that I didn't give you a chance to say or talk about?
I guess the only other thing that I wanted to mention, and this is only because it's a fun physics fact, I'm just dropping it in there.
Okay.
But I currently work at a kind of fusion facility. It's Cullum, the Center for Fusion Energy, and they house the JECT reactor, which is kind of a joint venture with Eurofusion, but it's actually the largest fusion reactor currently in the world.
Whoa.
And yeah, it's pretty cool. And the one bit of little nugget of information that I like to tell people is that the hottest place in the solar system is not actually the sun. It is the JECT fusion reactor.
That's awesome.
So yeah.
Do you want to go into a little detail as to how they achieve that kind of fusion?
Yeah. So basically the sun has to burn at about 10 to 15 million degrees C to create fusion. And so on Earth, because we don't have the same pressure that the sun can create, we have to get our plasma up to 150 million degrees C.
Wow.
So it's boiling. yeah, and you know, you have to create this plasma, so you have to move the particles like incredibly quick to get them up to those insane speeds. And yeah, so you have to, there's all sorts of problems that come with that, and it's about using the right materials that can withstand high neutron loads and high heat loads and everything. I think it's just one of the greatest temperature gradients. So I think like the center of the fusion reactor or the plasma is like 150 million degrees C, and then they probably like cool the walls of the reactor with cryogenics and stuff. So the walls are really cold to try and counteract the heat that they contain and stuff like that. So yeah, I think that's pretty cool. We've only managed short pulses at the moment, because obviously our materials can't sustain long pulses of the plasma being, you know, that fast and that hot.
Right.
So I think our next project is trying to build a fusion power plant where possibly we would be doing fusion reactions for hours on end, days on end, as long as we could, to connect it to the grid and harness that energy to power the country, really. So I think that's the next next step.
That sounds like really cool. How much power do you hope to generate from all of this?
I think a gigawatt.
Okay, that's...
is what we're looking for. But yeah, at the moment, the jet reactor currently uses up more energy than we get out.
Well, yeah, I think most fusion experiments are like that at the moment. But yeah. I think once we solve those problems, I think we can hopefully do something. And if I may add, you know, the thing is that, you know, as a scientist, as an engineer, you're not the only one working on this problem. You're working on it with dozens, if not hundreds, of other people from different fields who are all coming together. So, you know, that's the other thing I think people need to understand, that as a scientist, you're not like this lone individual coming up with a solution to a problem. You know, you're collaborating and working with other people towards a goal, you know.
Yeah.
So, but that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And so just like you were saying about collaborating, ITER is just this huge fusion reactor that they're building in the south of France. And it is literally a worldwide collaboration. I think most countries are contributing to it and helping either manufacture or supply certain parts of it. It's great to see everyone coming together for this like huge science experiment, because I think they're trying to build the world's largest reactor. Yeah,
that'll be good. That's cool. And you know, that's another pitch you can make to students, that you know, if you like to meet and engage with people from other countries from around the world, science and engineering is a good way to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, so yeah, that's really cool. So, I guess, is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, that's it. I'm done. Thanks. Thanks for letting me get that last bit in.
No problem. So why don't you tell people like how they can find you, whether you're on Twitter or, well, of course, YouTube, Instagram.
Yeah, YouTube is Science with Bexy. And literally, so are all my other handles. So Instagram, at Science with Bexy, Twitter, at Science with Bexy. And I also have a Facebook page. And yeah, just reach out and subscribe and sign up and watch my videos, because the more traction I can get, hopefully the more people can watch my videos and hopefully realize that science is fun and interesting and sometimes pretty cool.
sometimes
yeah.
Okay, I'll be sure to put it in the show description, and hopefully you'll get some new followers, subscribers, or something as a result of it. And
yeah,
thank you for being here and doing this with me.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me on and having me on. It's been really exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure it has. And I hope you have a good night. I hope you enjoyed my talk with Rebecca and learned from it. And be sure to like, share, subscribe, or leave a comment wherever you listen to this episode. Anything you do goes a long way to supporting this channel. And I look forward to you joining me for my next episode when I talk to a new science communicator.